Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. I'm excited about today's show, even though it's not a long form episode. What we've done, we've gone back and taken clips from previously released episodes on particular topics and points. I think they're powerful. I think they're worth listening to. So thank you for listening and hope you enjoy.
But it's one of those things, like if you understand how to make it grow and understand how to make it last, and then you think about, well, I'm not just thinking about my kids. I have three grandchildren also. That's probably the next set of policies that we're going to buy. Like, how do we start getting it to where they have stuff? Or, you know, and then like, how do we have it passed down generation over generation? You know, I mentioned it, you know, kind of one of the comments that my better half made today. You know, we were kind of looking at things, just kind of, and she made the comment. She said, this is the first generation. She's the first generation to have where she's not going to be leaving debt behind.
That's powerful.
That is powerful.
Yeah, very powerful.
Every other generation has left debt behind. Yeah. You know, either funeral expenses or, you know, things where they couldn't pass wealth down.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, she will be the first, and her policy is only a year old, and she's the first one that's going to have.
That's awesome. Where do you put that on a life insurance illustration? Where do you put that in your financial, you know, path, your program?
You can't.
And then, you know, the idea that I think the correct foundation, whatever that looks like for an individual or a family, you build the correct foundation. You know, you go through all the mental gymnastics that you have to go through, that we all have to go through, even to get to the point that you write a check at whatever comfort level. You know, I mean, when we all start out, I was looking over my shoulder for the first 3 years, easy, probably four, waiting for the hammer, waiting for what was wrong that I couldn't see, that is just going to pop up out of nowhere and crash the whole deal. You know, like, what's wrong? Well, after, you know, a certain amount of time, and you're practicing your comfort level, the deeper you look, the better it looks. And it is. It's like, I quit looking for what's wrong.
Well, a long time ago. You know, and I don't go in and look all the time, but it's one of those things. It's kind of nice to go in and check, you know, kind of how things are, you know, going and that kind of stuff. But
do you get pleasantly surprised?
I do. Yeah. And, you know, but it is one of those things, like, it took a while to kind of start figuring out, like, how does this play and how do you leverage it? I did go through several, you know, like, we looked at a lot of illustrations. I asked a lot of questions when we went through this initially.
You had the opportunity to hear Nelson twice.
Dr.
Cleveland.
Dr. Cleveland.
And then Bob Murphy, Dr. Robert Murphy, mm-hmm. and Carlos Laura. We held a 2017, I think.
Yeah, they were here. They wrote a book that I also read. But I mean, and really to where I've gotten to where I'm really comfortable with it has been because I have done, you know, a lot of research and a lot of, but it's also like trying to start to figure out, like, You kind of, some people, I think, come into it where they have some ideas of how they're going to do it. Like, one of the things I struggled with is I'm not a big business owner. And you look at a lot of the use cases and stuff is like, well, you can do stuff for like your employees. You can do stuff for your business partners. You can do stuff. Not a big business owner. I have some small things but I don't have a lot of insurable, you know, I can't go get a lot of insurable interest on folks because I don't, you know, I don't have that and that kind of thing. So but it's also starting to think, well, okay, even with one policy, there's a lot of stuff I've been able to do with just one policy. And being able to get it to where, you know, and I probably made some decisions right off the bat where I probably shouldn't have done a loan here or didn't, you know, but
part of the education that we all have to pay for.
Yeah. But it's also one of those things, like, at the end of the day, it's ultimately guaranteed. You know, you can make some mistakes, you can recover from mistakes, but if you learn the discipline of how to use it and then like build a foundation from it, it's such a powerful tool.
You know, and you mentioned the word mistakes because I think I've made them all. I hope I have, but you know, I'm human, so I haven't. But Nelson used to say he had a policy on a business partner, right? And several, but you know, one of them graduated, and he's like, in came that death benefit. So, you know, all the premium he paid in, I mean, there were outstanding loans. The guy graduates, in comes that death benefit, and he used to say in his seminars, and you know, that made up for an awful lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's like,
You know, we were talking about it today. So, you know, I have a loan. At the end of the day, and then so we pulled up the policy this morning. We're just kind of talking about it. Here's the loan amount. Here's the death benefit. Does it really matter that you're still going to get this pretty substantial, you know, death benefit if this little bit amount is taken away? Answer is no. It doesn't really matter because what's left is going to cover.
Right. And then you hear, I'm glad you said that, because in the terminology you just used was taken away. Because a very common is like, well, the life insurance company keeps a cash value if you die, or you're borrowing your own money. You're paying interest to borrow your own money and those kinds of things, which, you know, on its face, if you don't know and you only listen to the prevailing talking heads, you know, oh, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. No. So if you have an outstanding loan, it's you've enjoyed some kind of a purchase somewhere, some kind of a goods or services, right? Mm-hmm. Which is wealth. So you've enjoyed that, whatever it is, right? So it's not. Yeah. And then on the loan, you cannot borrow more than the loan value. The exactly. loan value is always less than the surrender value.
Yep.
We're talking about the cash value, right? Loan value, surrender value is all cash value. Well,
and, you know, the web portal is very easy about that. It tells you, it right? says you can only borrow
right.
this much. I've never been able to go in there and say, I want, you know, so it tells you, and it's, you know, and that's a nice part about it, because sometimes I'm not, you know, I'd like to get more, but you know,
sure. that's no problem. Just put more in, right?
Yeah, you know, but it tells you, I mean, and it keeps you out of trouble. And I know that's, but yeah, it's one of those things like, there, we have gotten value out of being able to take the loans back and do, you know,
probably what you were going to do anyway. Most of the time you're going to wind up.
Generally.
But I think that idea of trying to wrap your head around, like, what do you mean I need capital? Well, it's like every time you go to ask for a loan, that's capital, right? You're requesting it from someone else, but why not just use your capital? And I think the other thing that was really attractive about the whole life banking, you know, becoming your own banker, was this idea of using your money twice, getting two uses out of your dollar. Like, so you pay for premium, but then now you have this place that you can borrow from, and that then I can repay it on my terms and when I need it, and not have to necessarily go to a bank to ask for that, but to become my own banker. And so I loved this idea. And what I'm using my policy for is to help me pay my taxes. So I always saved, you know, because I'm an independent contractor and my own business owner, I'm saving every month for my taxes. And so that's how I funded my first policy. And then I use that and then just repay myself the money I save every month anyway. So that's my idea of, yeah, I have this place I was saving for my taxes anyways, and then I was already going to pay a premium, and then why not just continue to utilize that?
And we didn't get above third grade math doing that, did
no.
we?
No.
I mean, and it's so natural. You know, you're a naturalist, you know, health. Isn't this a natural solution to money?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh. And I don't have to be beholden to, you know, a guru. I mean, I believe we all need coaches. I think mm-hmm. so. I'm not, you know, I just don't believe that we should all be beholden to, you know, a financial expert or a health expert. We should learn enough about our finances and about our health and everything else that we're interested in mm-hmm. so that we can be competent. You know, now I want access to the professional. I want access to the expert. I just don't want to be dependent upon them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's a beautiful thing in my opinion. You know, this is a natural solution to money. It is mm-hmm. because I mean, money's just a tool, but it's got to reside somewhere. That's the medium yeah. of exchange that we use. I mean, it's It's a beautiful thing.
I can't wait to have my money in my bank instead of someone else's. And I know you're helping me build a bigger bank, but you know, it's just those things of, you know, you have to start somewhere. You have to start with your comfort zone and get your feet wet. And like you say, we all start too small. And but you know, you've given us some strategies to help us, you know, lock in age and lock in health, and you know, give us some ways to utilize our policies over time and to convert things in the future. So you know, we've taken those steps so that, you know, we can do those things. And, you know, in the meantime, while we're learning and while we're figuring out, you know, how does the cash flow all go, and, you know, how do you wrap your head around paying a premium, and, you know, just the mechanics of it all. I think it takes time, and, you know, there's really no substitute for just taking the time and getting the experience and incrementally, like you said, once you grasp it, why diversify? Just keep doing more of what's right, what you know.
Yep. No, and you know, without patronizing, I mean, I'm very proud of you, and I'm very proud of, you know, your partner, and because y'all have laid the correct foundation, right? And then you've even laid out the path to continue to expand. Once you wrap your mind around, oh, I'm doing this anyway with taxes, it's just sinking fund method. I'm accumulating money here to pay my taxes. Just don't pay your taxes 1 year and see what kind of property and assets swaps hands, right? But then that's a major thing. There's no question. It's very major, but that's only one thing that you're financing, right?
Yep. Yeah. And yeah, wait till I need a new car. It's happening soon.
Right. And that could probably be done in addition to the taxes at the same time.
Yep.
What a concept, right?
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marcus did his car already. He had a loan outstanding, and we converted that into his policy loans. And so he's learning how to do that and structure that and how we manage the cash flow about that. Yeah. So yeah, it's a matter of getting it and, you know, understanding enough, asking the questions from your mentors and calling the office, and then, you know, just
taking action.
What you're going to do anyway.
That's right. Take the action, build the entity, build the bank, start the policy, pay a premium, go through underwriting. As boring as all of that is, as time consuming as that is, it's worth it. Right. Yep. So
absolutely.
Perfect.
Well, I think the other thing I've learned is just that, at least along the way for myself, that no one really ever talked to me about what it really looked like to be properly insured. So, you know, I don't have kids, and so I never really thought about life insurance. I had, you know, a small enough policy to pay off the house and to leave some money to, you know, to support others. But, you know, I didn't. And maybe other people who have kids think differently of like, oh, I definitely need to have life insurance. I didn't feel that need, but I think that just learning how likely most people are probably underinsured. And even when we got our first policies and you said, you know, you're still underinsured, you know, if you really just run the numbers and look at your age and look at your health and look at your income, and that, and again, those numbers are different for everyone, but it's just, you know, income times time. And if you realize that life insurance is designed to be, you know, a replacement of income, and no one ever told you that you should take what you make and multiply it by 20 or 30 years. I mean, it's easy math, right? Like you said, third grade math. It's, you know, if you earn $100 and you're going to live for 30 years, that's what you should plan for, right? I guess no one ever really told me like what would be the right amount of insurance, and I never thought of it as income replacement. I guess I always thought of it as legacy, or you leave it to take care of others, but I never thought about it as an income replacement. And once you wrap your head around that, then the numbers become clean, and then you can realize, okay, I'm there, or I'm getting closer to what that really means.
That's awesome. And you know, thank you for even bringing that up. That was a kind of an educational, you know, conversation or two. The numbers, when it comes to life insurance, we're all limited in how much we can have, and then we're all limited in how much premium that we can pay, and we're limited by you know, the construct of life insurance and the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. It's not, these companies don't just come up with arbitrary numbers. Mm-hmm. And you're exactly correct. Most people are underinsured. I'm very proud that to be a part of, you know, you and Marcus, y'all's financial picture, because y'all are properly insured. And you didn't even know that you weren't, or even what that meant, or how to even calculate proper insurance for someone.
I was on hook for 5 years to paying all those interest to the bankers with the risk of losing. Because in the economy, there is the ups and there is the downs.
Sure.
I've been in both ends of, the spectrum. So at the same time I was going through all those struggles, the trucking industry, things went bad, like during the Trump presidency. Mm-hmm. It caused the freight market to decline. So then I realized there was a loss of revenue as well. Then I saw, you have to find a balance in between where whenever the market is low, you can still control the business. So all this time, I saw that I don't have to use bankers to run my business and be successful. But I saw that I can discipline myself, capitalize the system, now that I have implemented, using over and over.
Let's share, you know, as much as you wish of what you've done, because I mean, I think earlier, I don't know if it was before we turned the cameras on or not, but, you know, you actually, so you discovered it, you know, through the books and then to the Nelson Nash website and then listening to, you know, my videos and on the YouTube channel. And then I appreciate you mentioning the support, because there's an incredible team here that we do provide support.
Yeah.
But you got your first policy in September of last year.
Yeah, 6 months ago.
Basically. All right, 6 months ago. So what have you done, young man, since?
It is amazing what I have done. It is only 5 months as we speak since I requested my first policy loan. It was so easy to require. They did not ask for things like a collateral thing, except putting the death benefit as a collateral.
Well, the cash value is the collateral.
I was like, they don't need anything else. There's no social security. There is no.
Well, they already have that.
They already have it. Yeah. And there is no W-2 incomes. it is really so easy to request that policy loan. So I requested that policy loan. It took me 3 days. The money was landing in my bank account. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wow.
Let me just say, this is April. They're running a little longer on policy loans right now across the industry. But
yeah.
And let me say that, you know, I get to talk to clients every week, you know, on the phone, email, and different things. And that reminds me of an email I received, I think it was last week, a young man. He said, James, you know, not verbatim, but this is in essence what he said, because it was a longer email. There was more content than just this, but he did say in the email, look, I've been capitalizing the system for several years now. I haven't really needed to do a loan. So I just want, I just did my first loan. Mm-hmm. I went and did it online, and I just want to know that it's really that easy.
It really is. It really is, because I've requested two policy loans during this first 5 months. Mm-hmm. The first policy loan question, it was in October. After 3 weeks.
So September.
September to October, after the 3 weeks period that the money had to clear, I requested my first policy loan equally to what I had in my cash values. Then I applied it to my first commercial loan.
So you had a loan balance, and then you're spending, you're capturing that loan balance outside loan balance too.
Yes.
Okay.
So it took me once I got that money deposit in my bank account, it took me another, it was kind of a visual on my end. Yeah. I was like, based on my income, how soon can I add velocity to my banking system?
Right.
So now, because what I discovered was every penny that I was paying back to the policy, it became available again. So it became like I was recycling the money.
30 days, it's really about 30 calendar days generally.
Yes.
Pay a premium or a loan repayment.
Mm-hmm.
Then that value becomes available.
That value becomes available again for using for other things.
I mean, if people are willing to put the money into these policies, they can withstand tremendous downturns in the economy. And then you get into the stories of how many companies Walt Disney funded part of Disneyland through policy loans from his own insurance policies. Ray Kroc, mm-hmm. McDonald's, same thing, funded the beginning of McDonald's. There's so many stories Pampered Chef. I'm forgetting which company saved itself out of bankruptcy for years because of policy loans. So it's there. I mean, if people are willing to put the money into these policies, they can withstand tremendous downturns in the economy. They can withstand terrible things in their lives. So,
you know, you mentioned the bank holiday, 1933, FDR gave our grandfathers, right? Our forefathers, about 3 weeks to turn in their gold and swap them for those worthless dollars, right?
And the banks opened the safe deposit boxes and took the gold coins out of the safe deposit box, left paper money or IOUs in there.
I have a friend, he's retired, Joe. His daddy was a dentist down in South Texas. And as a dentist, he saved gold from fillings, right, in the safety deposit box. And that exactly happened to him during the bank holiday, right? They came into his safety deposit box and took the gold that came from fillings for teeth out of his safety deposit box. Yeah, but it can't happen to you, right? It can't happen to me.
Yeah, so I don't keep anything in safe deposit boxes. I mean, it's because if it's happened once, it can happen again. And not saying that I own any gold and silver, because I don't want anybody to know, but I would never keep it in a bank.
The cash values were just, you know, growing really even stronger than they illustrated. So it was not scary to jump out there on deals that seem to be legit deals.
Yeah.
Once at the end of the day, once you vetted and you know the markets are strong and the you see the value in creating more income, you know, and that's kind of what it's all about. So
you bought more policy, sold a property, bought a property, sold a property. I love that. Thought you were buying high and it went higher. And what else have you done? And it's okay just to buy policies, I'm just saying. The opportunities will come.
Yeah, so. Raw land, that's something that's having grown up on land and being in the areas that I live, it's a lot of rural areas that's where there's a lot of raw land, timber, things of that nature. And it seems to always work out better when your capital draws in the opportunities. Whenever a deal comes along to where the someone's need not from under something to continue their situation. And
it's an opportunity for them to get out from under it, and an opportunity for someone who's properly capitalized and has some knowledge on the deal.
Right. When you see deals, you know it's a deal. When the you attract the opportunities, the more capital you have, the more opportunities you attract. And it seems to work out. If the more patient you are, the better the deal. I've grown to see that. It took a while to see it, but I do see it. When you force things, it don't work out as well. Yeah. But when you're patient and you let things come to you, it seems to work out much better. And I had spoke to this guy a few times. He was a local investor that with land and timber. And I told him if a deal ever come along that, you know, let me know. And, you know, after about 2 or 3 years, I'd see him in the mornings and speak to him briefly because I'd be on my way to work. I didn't have a long time to just sit there and talk. But he said, hey, I got this piece of property I need to sell, and I'm looking to buy another piece that's larger track, and you might be interested. This is a decent piece that, you know, has its own road frontage and one way in, one way out. It's not landlocked, or, you know, it's not cut up into odd shapes. It's pretty laid out well. It's got good lines, property lines, and it might be something you're interested in. I was like, sure. So a few days went by, and our schedules lined up to where we went and looked at it together, and he showed me it, and I was like, man, it's a great piece of property. It has some rolling hills in it. It's in the edge of Alabama, but I seen the potential just based on what I know about raw land, and he laid a number out there that I was like, wow, are you sure? He's like, yeah, I need to unload this piece and move on. And, you know, I'm giving you, you know, I feel like a good deal. And I was like, yeah, actually you are. Yeah. Let me, you sit right there. Let me, I'll be back with you tomorrow. And I said, I'm gonna buy this track. Don't tell anybody else about it.
A good deal.
Yeah, that was a great deal. It was it was a large piece of land. It was 243 acres, which in my book's a large piece of land. So he had already cut all the timber off of it, but
is that what he did? Was he?
Yeah, he brought raw land and cut timber and sold the timber, and then he would resell the tracts of land. And
sure,
and that's, you know, it serves its purpose, I guess. I'm sure he makes a lot of money doing that, but at the same time, he probably runs into situations to where he buys tracts of land that aren't as easy to sell, because he'll buy them in locations that may be a lot of low land, and, you know, getting skidders in and out, it creates a mess, and some people don't have the vision to see over that stuff. And some tracks he could get stuck with, I'm sure.
Sure.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.